Hey guys, it's Mina. Before we get started with today's show, wanted to remind you to check out the SV Pod with Scott Van Pelt. SVP was in South Carolina for Phil Mickelson's historic PGA win at age 50. He'll put the feat in perspective and share great stories from his time at Kiowa. Check out the SV Pod wherever you get your podcasts. Also, The Ultimate Fighter, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract, is back. Stream the season premiere on Tuesday, June 1st, only on ESPN+. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks that playoff P is what happens when you don't want your mom to know that you relieved yourself in the house. That's Lenny. There's layers to that joke. You got to kind of really think it over. Play off P. Just, you know, I don't want to spell it out for you guys. But I'm going to jump right in because I sense my guest today is not in the mood for laughs. Otherwise, I'm sure he would have cracked up at that open. So I invited Charles McDonald, frequent guest, you guys know him, on the show once their reports emerged, shall we say, that the Falcons were considering trading Julio Jones last week. This is a story that has developed rapidly to the point where five minutes before we started taping, the brilliance of this, and there's a lot of lack of clarity around the revelation whether Julio Jones maybe knew he was on television. Well, I'm sure we'll find that out by the time this show is out. But there's no speculation required because Julio Jones himself said on Undisputed to Shannon Sharp on Fox Sports 1 that he wants out, not to the Cowboys. My only regret, Charles, is that this didn't happen while you and I were taping so I could have gotten your real-time reaction.
I think that might have been bad because it probably would have all have been bleeped out. But yeah, this is, for Falcons fans, this is a solemn day. Today is a funeral. Julio Jones has said that he wants out, whether he knew he was on live television or not. I think he's made his feelings pretty clear. And just to sit back for a second and think how we got to this point where the Falcons are trading, to me at least, unquestionably the best player in franchise history is just wholly embarrassing on the entire organization.
Ooh, okay. We're going to talk about that. We're going to unpack how we got here, what it means for the Falcons, where Julio Jones might go. And then I promise we're going to talk about non-Falcons related topics, including the rookie running backs training as wide receivers, the AFC South, some stuff like that. But first we're going to talk about the Falcons because originally, Charles, I was planning on asking you the question of like, okay, should the Falcons trade Julio? Because I put out a lot of content around this. I was confused by the logic behind Atlanta trading Julio. Like, I understand that they have $0 in cap space, but it didn't make sense to me that the move was to trade Julio probably for a depressed price, which we can talk about, rather than giving Grady Jarrett, who's the best defensive player they've got, a contract extension to make, you know, it's not a lot of money that we're talking about. And so it didn't make sense to me. And especially again, given that they didn't draft a quarterback. So like the message we were getting was, okay, this is a team that needs cap space and they're rebuilding on one hand, but then on the other hand, they drafted a tight end, fourth overall. It's the highest a tight end has ever been drafted. So the vision for this team seemed to be, let's go, you know, all systems go on offense. And so setting aside the Julio wanting out, which I actually think gives a lot of clarity to the story.
Yeah.
Absent that, it didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I guess going into the offseason, there were really two paths that the Falcons could have gone on that would have both made sense to me. Like, if you're Arthur Smith and you're someone that has just completely revitalized the career of Ryan Tannehill and kind of, you know, turned that Titans offense into a straight juggernaut over the past couple seasons, mm-hmm. If I was him, I would be looking at this like, hey, like, if I can do this with Ryan Tannehill and Corey Davis and A.J. Brown, I could definitely do this with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. And if I'm in a spot where I can add another elite talent at the top of the draft with Kyle Pitts to kind of round out like this three-headed monstrous receiving core, as I enter my first year as a head coach, like that's obviously something that you'll be interested in if you believe in yourself as a coach. But on the other hand, like you could take this long-term view, like we have the fourth pick in the draft, you know, four quarterback class. So we're kind of guaranteed to get one of these guys that's projected to be a long-term starting quarterback. And whether they stick behind Matt Ryan for a year or if you trade him, you know, getting that long-term guy and then maybe shipping off some other pieces as we try to build this for the next coming years, like both of those paths make sense. And like you said, it seemed like they were just going to go all in. Let's win now. Let's try to squeeze the last that we can out of the Matt Ryan seasons. And I don't know, just try to have some fun. Like, I don't think that that's such an egregious plan. But with this Julio trade, it kind of, you know, what seems to be coming, it's like they're 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And I don't really see how you're supposed to maximize this by trading, you know, one of the top three receivers in the game. Because I think one thing that's been misconstrued by people who are talking about this Julio trade is, you know, I don't really think that Julio is a diminished version of himself based on what we saw last season from him. Like, sure, he's lost a step, but the step that he was starting with ran a 4.3 with a broken foot at the combine and broke like basically every athletic metric that you can think of in 2011. So he's still someone that I think can be a bona fide dominant number one receiver. And it's just kind of bizarre the way that this is played out, where you're 1 foot in rebuilding, 1 foot out. And it just kind of seems like you're not going to end up with the best version of your team that you can this year.
Right. Like 80% Julio is still a top 10 to 15 wide receiver in the NFL. I think like it did seem like once the Falcons had restructured Matt Ryan way before the draft, that made it less likely they were going to draft a quarterback, because with the restructuring, it made it difficult to get out of Matt Ryan's deal for 2 years. Yeah. So, you know, I was mixed about the Falcons taking a quarterback. I said, I think there's a bunch of different directions this team could go in because of the restructure. And then because of the fact that I don't think they were as bad as their record last year. In fact, they had the without green wins of a 7.5 win team. But I understand the argument that, okay, this team is so stacked on offense. Like Calvin Ridley, I believe, is a true number one. He's probably one, I think he's one of the more underrated players in the NFL. And then you draft Kyle Pitts. Like this team is very loaded on offense and has a lot of problems on defense. And, you know, what if we could just spread, like, what if we could reallocate our resources a little bit to improve the defense?
Yeah.
I question whether, like, they might get less than they got for Mo Sanu, Charles. Like, right. That is very right. likely. And that's why this whole thing is such a disaster to me. Like, it's less about trading Julio Jones, which I don't like, but, you know, whatever, I can see the arguments for. It's more like you're probably going to trade him for a diminished return.
Yeah, they screwed this up big time. Another problem is, like, they can't even really afford to bring on an impact defensive player, because part of the reason why they have to trade him is just to get their draft class on the roster. And, you know, we talked about there's other ways that you could do that. You could restructure Grady Jarrett if he doesn't want to take a contract extension, because I would understand why Grady would not want to take a contract extension right now. I mean, I think his deal expires after next season, then he'll be up when the cap explodes again. So I get why he wouldn't want to do that. But, I mean, for you to find yourself where – all right, we didn't trade Julio before the draft. Maybe before the draft, you could have convinced one of these teams at the bottom of the first round to give you a first round pick. And then immediately add someone that's going to help you, you know, with that first round pick. You take Kyle Pitts at four, get someone else, the defensive player at the bottom of the first round. Sucks, but maybe you can, you know, rationalize that a little bit. But now, you know, we're talking about a second round pick, a third round pick, like second round pick plus like a sixth round swap. And that's just not something that's obviously, like, the draft has gone by, so those are going to be 2022 picks, and like you're trading Julio to actively just get worse for the 2021 season after you restructured Matt Ryan, basically locking him for two more years. I don't understand how you come through this and end up trading Julio for day two picks and feel like, all right, we did a good job here, because by all, like you said, they might trade him for less than they got for Mo Sanu. And Mo Sanu is, you know, he had a great time in Atlanta and he had some fun years, but he ain't Julio Jones, man. And it's just, it's just kind of crazy.
The Mo Sanu trade, by the way, underrated W for whatever you think about Thomas Dimitrov. That was, he fleeced the hell out of Bill Belichick on that one.
Yeah.
Let's give him his flowers for that. Yeah, because if they had done this before the draft, you know, they could have gotten, there's all these pass rushers that win at the end of the first, beginning of the second. You know, like your Greg Rousseau's, for example, Aziz Ajulari, like guys who really could have helped this year for a team that needs help on that front seven. Well, they need help a lot of places on defense, but definitely you can, there's so many players, Trevon Merrig would have been a great Falcon. Sorry, this is really brutal.
I know.
Something I hate about this Aaron Rodgers story and like the conversation around it is like we're being asked to give our, like, to judge emotions. Like, oh, is Aaron Rodgers right or wrong to be angry? I don't know. Like, we can talk about the football moves and whatever and how they've equipped him, but like, if the dude hates a guy there, like Brian Gutekunst or whatever, there's nothing I can say about that. And so if Julio wants out, I don't have an opinion about that. We do have opinions about the process of it, right? Like how this was managed. And it seems like that's what you're most upset about is like the timing of this seems like the worst possible, like unless Julio was like, I love this team until like 10 days ago. It seems like this was horribly mismanaged from a Falcons perspective in terms of optimizing the roster.
Yeah. And I get that part of it is, you know, the financial issues where you kind of have to, I guess at this point, you know, you have to wait until June 1st to make a trade. But, you know, now as we sit here and we look back at the Falcons offseason, it just seems like this was just totally reactive. And they just really, it's like if you trade Julio, you got a lot worse this offseason. Because think about the free agent signings that they made. They didn't have much money. So, you know, you're walking into the season with your top three edge rotation is like Dante Fowler, Barkevious Mingo, Brandon Copeland. You got rookies starting in the secondary. You're probably going to have Richie Grant starting at free safety. You know, this is not a team that got significantly better through additions that they've made in the offseason. So it's just like you're taking a major step back on where you were last year. And then if you're going to do that, it's like, why are you bringing back, you know, a 36-year-old quarterback for two more years? Why not just blow the whole thing up from the start? And to me, like that was the issue kind of with restructuring Matt Ryan in the first place. But at the time, like I didn't think that restructuring Matt Ryan would still end in a Julio Jones trade, like where it seems like we're headed towards. And honestly, like if this is a situation where Julio kind of wants out, I guess that makes me feel a little bit better that maybe it's not totally the front office like fumbling this, but
it's more logical.
it's more logical. But just to think about the moves that kind of took place to get here, I mean, signing James Carpenter and Jamon Brown in the 2019 offseason, those signings obviously did not work out. They're sitting on the cap space right now. You end up cutting Desmond Trufant. He's sitting on the cap space right now. So you kind of look at some of these moves and you're like, man, like if they just kind of didn't get overzealous and say, we want 330-pound guards because big guards mean we can run the ball better. Back in 2019, that you probably have enough money to sign a rookie class right now. And it's just kind of hard to parse that you end up losing the best player in franchise history because of these mistakes. But, you know, I don't really know where the front office goes from here. I guess like you sign your rookie class and say toodles and you do a nice little Twitter video, but it just feels like such an unsatisfactory ending for, you know, like I said, the greatest player in franchise history, you just get such a small return for him.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're speculating, but we don't know. But right. Yeah, but it feels like if there was a big return in the works, the, like, I don't know, tone around this might be a little bit different. I mean, so let's talk about that, who the trade partner might be from the perspective of, like, the teams that should be in on it. So Field Yates shared the financials. I think it's worth mentioning because some of the teams being mentioned have even like as much money as the Falcons. So that's something that needs to be considered. 2021, they would owe Julio $15.3 million guaranteed, which is, you know, the Falcons cap savings. 2022, 11.5 with only two guaranteed. 2023, 11.5. So it's a good deal for the acquiring team. That's 3 years, $38 million, and only...
And that kind of played out like a one-year deal almost. With like
yes, options. Exactly. Yeah, it's very little guaranteed. So A lot of teams should be interested. I mean, so it was, I can't remember who broke the news, but it was reported that Julio himself was interested in the Falcons. The report, or the, pardon me, the Panther, Patriots, the report was that he felt Matt Ryan had lost a bit of zing on his ball, which don't know if he watched many Pats games last year, Julio, but from a football and financial perspective, setting aside the abilities of the quarterback, don't mean to diminish Cameron Newton, who I'm a big fan of. It makes a lot of sense. They need a wide receiver. They, despite acquiring all those tight ends, they're still pretty lacking there. And they also, I think, have the money to afford it. So Pats, to me, should be a leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah, Pats make sense. They make sense, but not for the reason that's like being floated out there, because yeah, he wants to play with Cam Newton, but just based on the history with rookie quarterbacks, like outside of Patrick Mahomes, like Mac Jones is probably going to end up playing at some point this year. So I don't know. That one doesn't quite make a whole lot of sense to me. But obviously, like, that would be a huge upgrade for the Patriots. And I mean, like, if you can get someone like Julio Jones, even if it's just for 1 year, that's worth at least trying. Like, let's say that he actually is, you know, over the hill and he's washed in this injury that he had last year just took everything out of him. It's still worth trading like a second or third round pick, or maybe even both, just to find out. And I think, you know, one team that I would like to see would be the 49ers, just kind of reunite Shanahan with Julio Jones. I mean, that pairing was absolutely electric. And if you're the 49ers, you got a nice little stable of receivers with, you know, Debo and Brandon Ayuk, but I don't think any of those guys can really, you know, dominate coverages the way that Julio Jones can. And in the event that George Kittle suffers another injury, like, you still have a top flight passing target out there on the field. And I think that that's something they'd be able to afford. It would definitely, that would probably be like the last move that they can make this offseason for the 49ers. And maybe you have to free up a little bit of room to go sign the rest of your rookie class. But that'd be really enticing to me if I'm Kyle Shanahan. He's already been collecting former Falcons on offense. Like, he's got Alex Mack, he had Tevin Coleman last year, Mohamed Sanu's on the roster right now. So that's clearly not something that he's, you know, afraid of. But I like, just for me personally, and for what it could kind of mean for Trey Lance's development, I would love to see him end up in San Francisco.
Yeah, and they don't have first round picks, but apparently it doesn't matter as it pertains to Julio. Did Julio have his best year with Shanahan, the 2016 season? Was that Julio's best season? I mean, no, it was Matt Ryan's.
That was the year that he had 300 yards versus the Panthers. So I'm going to go ahead and say
that. Yeah. I was just revisiting the Randy Moss trade for the Pats, and I forgot that it was just a fourth. So, jeez. Another team I think that makes a lot of sense is Indy. Team that's really lacking in wide receivers. I know they brought back T.Y. Hilton. They have Michael Pittman Jr., who's okay, but you know, I think if they're really going to rehabilitate Carson Wentz's career, Julio would be like the splash move. This is a team that has avoided splash moves aside from the DeForest Buckner trade, has money. I think they have like the second or third most cap space still. Oh no, they're fifth or sixth now, whatever. I think, you know, they went and got Eric Fisher, but we don't know he's going to play. I just think that's a team that like really didn't address skill player in the draft. And I think back to Carson Wentz's good years with Frank Reich when, let's see, it was Alshon Jeffrey was the number one in 2017, right? I'm not wrong.
Yeah, I think so.
Quote unquote MVP season. Yeah. So I just think that that team makes a lot of sense. The other one I would throw out, people keep saying the Titans, they don't have any money. They obviously have the need. They'd have to clear out a ton of cap space. I mean, they're number two. I felt bad. I sent this to you that on air, someone mentioned that they, you know, they got a Rams receiver, and I was like, Josh Reynolds. I mean, I like Josh Reynolds, but like, you know, that's
Julio.
I
think maybe even another team that could work out if they were, you know, feeling frisky and aggressive, Cleveland. Like, that makes sense. Like, if they could, like, they have the money to do it. You know, like I say, it's like 31 teams should be calling about this. Yeah. Like, if you can get the less than a first round pick, I just don't see why any team wouldn't be in. I mean, if even if you're the Chiefs, like, let's figure out some salary cap magic and see if we can make this thing work. I mean, it's worth it. It's boring, like, no matter where you are as a team, like, shoot, even if I was the Jaguars, like, I'd be thinking about it too.
Jaguars, yeah,
right. Trevor Lawrence in there, the Jets should be thinking about it. I mean, every single team on the planet, including the Falcons, could use someone like Julio Jones on their roster. And you know, we're at this point where you can get him at such a discount compared to the caliber of player that he is. I mean, a second round pick, like, you're never gonna find someone that good in the second round. We're talking about someone at the time when he came out of Alabama was like, him and AJ Green were two of the best receiver prospects of all time. So it's, you know, as a Falcons fan, it's disheartening, and I keep coming back to that. But if you're a fan of a team in the NFL, I just don't see any logic behind not exploring a trade for Julio Jones. I mean, we've already seen that the Ravens have, you know, they basically tried to have negotiations with the Falcons, but their price wasn't high enough. And now they might have to settle for something like that if Julio is actually going to make a push himself to get out of here.
Washington is another team I feel like should consider it. I mean, this is what confuses me, Charles. Like, okay, so the price tag should be about supply and demand. And you and I seem to agree that the demand is a zillion teams. So the price tag, one would think, would be higher, at, you know, at least like a high second. Well, you know, can't know that. But, or, you know, like at least, I realize you can't get an impact player because of the cap stuff. Although, if again, like if Atlanta was trying to compete, one would think, okay, let's get that impact player. I don't know. Stephon Gilmore or whatever, and then let's restructure Grady Jarrett. Like if the Falcons, let's say they traded for Stephon Gilmore and restructured Grady Jarrett to make him fit. I don't know what Stephon Gilmore's contract is. I don't have it in front of me. It's probably a lot. It's probably comparable to Julio, right? Anyways.
Yeah. Like
that team is competitive. Don't you think?
I think it could be. I think the team, as is currently set up right now, with Julio Jones theoretically on the roster, could be competitive. Because if I'm the Falcons and I'm looking at the rest of the NFC South, like, I don't see why I can't finish in, you know, second place. The Panthers, I mean, maybe they could be frisky, but I personally would not be, I guess, counting myself out because they traded for Sam Darnold. And the Saints, like, I know they lost to Taysom Hill twice last year. But, you know, I don't see why I wouldn't be able to compete with that, and especially since the Saints secondary is pretty thin, especially a corner across from Lattimore. So it's just kind of weird because, you know, the more that I think about it, like I personally really wanted them to pick a quarterback at four because I thought, you know, we talked about before, like Justin Fields, he's a great quarterback prospect and he would be a pretty good fit in Arthur Smith's offense. And but you didn't. And the more I thought about it, like, that's fine because I don't see why the Falcons couldn't be a playoff team with the current construction of Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Kyle Pitts, with Arthur Smith pulling the strings. Like, that's a really attractive option to have for your team. And now, like, you almost have to think, like, well, what does Kyle Pitts' role turn into? Like, is he going to be asked to do more than maybe he can handle as a fourth overall pick? Because he's probably going to be asked to slide into some of those sets where Julio will be playing. I mean, it just kind of changes the whole dynamic of what the ceiling of this Atlanta offense can be, because, you know, Calvin Ridley's the number one receiver. Pace is probably going to be a dynamic tight end, but, you know, if you had Julio, I think you could probably potentially get back to being a top five offense.
I think there is a perception that the Atlanta defense is terrible. They actually finished 14th in DVOA last year, 19th versus the pass, sixth against the run, which shocked me. I do think, like, it was a really interesting group because they were so erratic. I think of like the Chiefs game where all of a sudden like the pass rush was incredible. And you like with the secondary, you'd have like games where like the AJ Terrell looked like really promising and then games where he looked really terrible. So right now, you know, he's still there. I do not. Oh, Kendall Sheffield. Jeez Louise. Yeah. And Isaiah Oliver. They signed Fabian Moreau. That's kind of a sneaky, interesting signing. Foye Olukun, Pride of Yale, Deion Jones, Dante Fowler, Grady Jarrett. They brought back Dean Pease. who resurfaced Jay-Z style out of retirement. Do you think the Falcons' defense is going to be better this year?
I think the best case scenario for them is kind of like, if you can play like that 14th ring defense all season, I think that's not a really bad outcome for them. Because I will say this, last year after Dan Quinn got fired and Raheem Morris and Jeff Ulbrich got to put a bigger imprint of their own ideas on the defense, I thought just the way that it was structured was just a lot better. I mean, they weren't sitting back and letting things happen to them. They were kind of forced in the action with a lot of blitzes. Like, if you go back and watch that Raiders game from last year where they just pummeled Derek Carr, I mean, the timing, the structure, the effectiveness of that blitz game, A.J. Terrell came on, I thought, as a pretty decent man corner by the end of the season. Like, I think some of the pieces are a little bit underrated. And honestly, Isaiah Oliver last year, just they stuck him in the slot and randomly, like, mm-hmm. he was really good at that, even though I don't think that's really anything that people projected him to be coming out of Colorado, but he kind of figured it out there. The spot that worries me the most is really just like non-Grady Jarrett pass rushers.
Yeah.
Grady's great. I think in a world where Aaron Donald doesn't exist, you can make a case where he could potentially be the best defensive tackle in the league. Like, he's in that conversation, but outside of him, Dante Fowler's coming off a year where he had to take a pay cut. The rest of the guys, like I said, they're just on 1 year, like vet minimum deals. I think that this year for the Falcons defense, that secondary is really going to be tested, because in order for them to get pressure, I think they're going to have to send Deion Jones and Foye on blitzes. And, Foye, I thought he was awesome on blitzes that last year, but, just simple math, you're dropping the guy out of coverage, so the rest of the guys are going to have some stress on them. So, I do think it's reasonable for them to be an average defense this year if Dean Pease is like as good as I think he is, but the floor is really, really low on this defense.
Yeah, probably blitz more. They drafted Richie Grant too, who I like, the UCF safety. So assuming Julio's gone, I have a lot of trouble ranking the rest of the NFC South. Like, looking at after the Bucs, whatever, obviously in a tier of their own. When you look at the Saints, the Falcons, and the Panthers rosters, you can really make a case for any of these teams finishing in any order, in my mind. Like you said, the Saints, last week, Dominique Foxworth and I ranked defenses, and I still kept the Saints in the top 10 because they still have really good players at every level. The problem is they just lost, the cornerback's an issue, and then they lost depth, right? So it feels like an injury is going to take that defense out. And then on offense, who the heck knows what we're going to get out of Jameis Winston. There's totally a case to be made where the offense is more explosive. There's also a case to be made where obviously they turn the ball over a lot more. So that's an issue. They did not add another wide receiver, which I thought was confusing. And then with the Panthers, again, it's like, okay, is the the Sam Darnold redemption process going to work? I don't know. He's obviously in a better situation. Defense, a lot of young players, a lot of interesting talent. Drafted J.C. Horn. I like the Hassan Reddick signing, bolstered. I mean, I could see a case for this Panthers defense, which was really better than it had. And they signed A.J. Bouye. Wow, I'm looking at depth chart. I could see a case for them taking a leap forward as well. I still think the whole roster is still a year away. But again, I really think any of these teams could finish in any order.
Yeah, like I feel like the Bucs are cemented number one, but the Falcons could finish second through fourth. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, it really just is wide open in that division. And now, with seven playoff spots, like, that could be enough to get you in as a wild card team, which, I think any year you can get into the playoffs is a pretty good thing. So that's just another reason why it's so confusing to me, like, how you end up in this spot where you're going to make yourself less competitive in a year when it seems like anyone can kind of go in and run in the NFC South. And who knows? I mean, I'm going to be careful here, but who knows? Maybe even Tom Brady could take a step back this year. And you could be a little feisty with the Bucs. I'm not saying like you finished number one, but maybe you can steal one of those games that you did in last year. So, the NFC South is wide open. I'm personally really interested to see what that Panthers offense looks like, because I really like it. It's hard not to like the weapons that they have there, especially if Christian McCaffrey is healthy. And I guess like there's a part of me like from covering the Jets that thinks that Sam Darnold could possibly figure this out, like in a spot maybe where the spotlight isn't so bright and he's got some weapons again. He's reunited with Robbie Anderson and they had some a pretty special chemistry, I thought, during the Adam Gase year. So you're getting that back. That's the one team, like not just in the NFC South, but in the entire NFC that I'm pretty interested in seeing.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Christian McCaffrey, we're going to talk a little bit about running backs and catching passes. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break and answer some of your questions.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow, MinaShow.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Thank you, as always, guys, for your incredible iTunes reviews. I really enjoy them, read them all, even the incredibly long question here about Tim Kirkjian watching Mare of Easttown. Do you watch Mare of Easttown, Charles?
No, no.
Okay, we'll skip that one then. I really appreciate it. Great questions. And so we'll just answer a few of them before getting back to some of the things going on in the NFL. JDunk123 asks me, why do you hate the Bears? Mina, do you not like talking about the Bears? Do you not find them interesting? Well, JDunk, you're in luck because I now find the Bears interesting and I'm going to talk about them a lot now that they have Justin Fields. So, Charles, let me rephrase this for you, because every week we have to answer this question on ESPN talk shows. When should Justin Fields start? Now my immediate reaction was immediately. They are playing the Rams Sunday night, week one. I am concerned for him. Do you still think he should start week one, or should the Bears sacrifice Andy Dalton to the Rams week one and then bring in Justin Fields as the savior?
Personally, I think that I guess like the idea of ruining, like if Justin Fields gets ruined over one game against the Rams, like he probably wasn't that good to begin with. Ooh. So I say, if that were the case, like I say, you just play him now. Like if you're Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, you're playing for your careers here. Yes. At least the people who will be in charge as teams. I know what Andy Dalton looks like. Don't quite know what Justin Fields looked like, but I feel like the floor is higher because at least even if the passing takes a little bit of time to come off, we know that he's an NFL caliber, you know, as a running quarterback. Just due to the athleticism. And I think it's kind of funny here that like no one is just even mentioning that Nick Foles is still on the team. Like he's just sitting there eating some cap space. But Nick, just filling out your quarterback room, but he's just not in the equation at all. But like, yeah, I wouldn't even really mess around with Andy Dalton unless that Justin Fields gets to training camp, which is like, oh, he's not even close to ready. But other than that, just put him in and see what happens.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that it's pretty obvious. You know, it's funny, interesting. Like, it's funny, interesting. That's a not a word. It's funny and interesting, Charles, because I think a lot of the things the Bears have done on offense already make sense for Justin Fields, particularly the amount of play action they used out of a wide zone rushing scheme with Mitch Trubisky. Those are things that Justin Fields will be comfortable doing. I think they're probably going to want to add some RPOs, which incidentally, Justin Fields didn't really do that much of in college. And obviously more option football, but like that's stuff that they can figure out this summer if he's comfortable with. Like, you're going to have a sense by September what his comfort level in this offense is. And so my only, like, I guess hesitation would be like, if it looks like he's not there, fine, don't start him. Like, use your judgment. But I would be surprised if he's not.
Yeah, like if you get through training camp and you realize, like, oh, he's performing on par with Andy Dalton, just put him in.
Yeah. Okay, listener 006 wants to know if the Niners sufficiently addressed their secondary. I think that's a great question because I think the success of this Niners season obviously it'll depend on Trey Lance, but like that's 1A for them. They brought back a lot of players. Jason Verrett, Emmanuel Mosley, Kaywan Williams, the cornerback. There's a third cornerback, I think, question mark. They did draft Ambry Thomas. And then Jakusi Tartt and Jimmy Ward. But, you know, the depth is not great. The injuries are a question mark. And I think it's like very precarious is how I would describe it.
Yeah, I guess the way that I would look at it is if I could turn injuries off going into a season, I would feel pretty good about where they are. I mean, like you said, the third spot, I think with Dante Johnson is probably going to be a spot where teams circle that like on their weekly game plan stuff when they play the Niners. But I mean, Kaywan Williams, I think he's like one of the better slot corners.
He's good.
Yeah, he's good. Jason Verrett, I thought Verrett was cooked, but he kind of had a nice little bounce back time with the 49ers. And I like Jimmy Ward. I mean, and Jakusi Tartt, I think that's a pretty good safety deal. But like you said, it's just a depth that kind of scares you a little bit. I mean, with Verrett's history of injuries, that's got to scare you. But, you know, I do like that little, I shouldn't say little, but like Emmanuel Mosley. I like him. Even if maybe he struggled a little bit last year, just like the whole body of work, I've been kind of a fan of his stuff. So, you know, if I was a 49ers fan, like right now, like I'd feel okay, but a little uneasy about how the secondary goes, because I think, and I think you can say about this a lot of teams, but like if, you know, a guy or two gets hurt from your starters, then that's going to be a big issue for you.
For sure. Final question, Ben J. Arms. Okay. There's been a lot of criticism of the Bengals for taking Chase over Sewell. I'm laughing because I got into a weird fight with Bengals Twitter, which I didn't know was like possible, but considering the Bengals ranked, this is a very nice review, by the way. Thank you. Considering the Bengals also ranked last in wide receiver separation, explosive pass plays, seems like wide receiver was also a huge need. Now that the draft is in the books, did the Bengals do enough to address their O-line, signing Reef and picks, or will Joe Burrow spend the next year on his back again? Should the Dolphins have taken Sewell over Waddle? That's a really underrated criticism that I feel like as much heat as the Bengals have gotten for taking a wide receiver over Sewell, I think the Dolphins should have gotten just as more, or if not as much heat. But I'm also Dolphins Twitter also hates me for criticizing their offensive line. So this is a double whammy. Okay. Starting, let's just focus on the Bengals really quick before we wrap these questions. I think the Chase pick was defensible. I do think they needed a wide receiver. I would have gone Sewell, but I don't think it was like so dramatic, like, oh my God, I can't believe they did this. Now, I think, as I've said, the point I made about the Bengals, or was trying to make and apparently failed, is that there's a tremendous amount of pressure now on Jonah Williams to not only live up to his draft status, but stay healthy, which has been an issue with him for two seasons. That is the risk you're taking here. I think Jonah Williams could be a good player. Riley Reiff is fine, but he's been hurt. That's my issue with the Bengals.
Yeah, and Jonah is weird. Like, not weird, but it's like a one-dimensional kind of player. Like, I think he's an above-average guy in pass pro, but in terms of run blocking, I don't quite see it with him. And, You know, the funny thing to me was the people who are anti Penei Sewell for the Bengals pick at 5, they're like, well, we signed Riley Reiff. I'm like, okay, and what? Like, well, what does that have to do with picking Penei Sewell? Because the way that I thought about it was, you know, you take Sewell, maybe you stick him at left tackle, and then you have Riley Reiff and Jonah Duke it out at guard. Maybe you give Jonah the right tackle spot because he's more comfortable at tackle. And, you know, Riley Reiff's here on a one-year deal. So I don't really understand why that would prevent you from picking someone who has, like, been lauded as one of the better left tackle prospects to come out in a few years. Like, I thought the Sewell pick was something, like, one of those offensive line picks that maybe upgrades multiple spots with one pick. And when I look at this offensive line, I just don't really see why it wouldn't be like one of the bottom 10 units again in the league. You know, hopefully that, you know, for Joe Burrow's sake and, you know, the rest of the offense's sake, that Jackson Carmen pick in the second round kind of works out. But
well, that's the other thing. Like, I got a lot of heat. They're like, you didn't mention Jackson Carmen. And I'm like, yeah, dude, like moving into guard, I didn't like him, love him that much as a prospect to begin with. I mean, I could be wrong, but like,
yeah, could be wrong.
It's a big question mark.
Right. It's a big question mark. And I guess, you know, they're running, or I guess they're going to be a good test to see like how much wide receiver talent matters versus, you know, the whole offensive line. Because I will give the Bengals this, like, if you're in a spot where T Higgins is like your third best receiver, like your clear third best receiver, that's not a bad spot to be in. I think Jamar Chase is going to be a damn good pro. I don't know if he's on this caliber of prospect where, like, you need to be taking him number 5 overall, but I don't see why he can't turn to a guy that produces multiple 1,000-yard seasons and ends up in the Pro Bowl a few times. I just look at this offensive line, and unless, like, Jonah Williams takes a huge step forward and Michael Jordan takes a huge step forward at left guard, this still seems like a spot where they're going to get beat up when they go play Baltimore and Pittsburgh and Cleveland. I just don't see how they have the edges on any of those defensive fronts right now.
Yeah, it's a tough division. I think perhaps like the biggest upgrade is at coach, because they brought back Frank Pollock and got rid of, what's his name, Jim Turner is the offensive coach, the line coach, who Bengals fans detest based on the performance. It does seem like offensive line coach is like one of those weird underrated things. Like when you look at what happened in Cleveland or you look at what happened in Denver, it's like, oh, right, Jim Callahan and Mike Munchak are really good and got the best out of their players. So perhaps that'll bring about some impactful change as well.
Also, hold on, real quick, I don't know if you saw this, but Ian Rapoport's tweeting that apparently Julio Jones requested a trade a few months ago. And
why didn't that get out? Why did the Falcons make it like cap space? Like, why didn't they just say Julio wants out? I would have taken their side.
I don't know. It's just
okay. Well,
whatever.
All right. So, other thing I want to talk about is another story that induced a lot of hand wringing. It's interesting because both of the first round running backs, Najee Harris and Travis Etienne, at minicamp, news came out, they're both training as wide receivers, cross training. One of those stories induced a lot more hand-wringing than the other, and that was the Etienne one. I think the reason largely is just because it's the Jaguars and Urban Meyer has not done a lot to evince trust in his decision making, and that is totally fair. But I do want to talk about this with you from like a football perspective, because I have some thoughts about. So, like, basically, let's focus on ETN here. The idea that, so like when they drafted him, Urban was like, yeah, he's third down back, which made no sense. He's not even good at pass pro, whatever. Now he's talking about him like he's a sort of a wide receiver who also is a running back. I don't know. What do you make of this? And like, do you think there's some utility to using ETN in particular in this role?
I do think there is, because the thing with ETN that obviously, you know, Urban Meyer has been obsessed with, I mean, going back to his time at Florida, is just speed, 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 speed. So I guess the way the first thing that I thought of when I hear Urban Meyer talk about Travis Etienne, the way he's going to use him is like the way Curtis Samuel was kind of used at Ohio State, where, you know, he's getting a healthy dose of carries and receptions. So in Curtis Samuel's final year at Ohio State, 2016, he had 97 carries and 74 receptions, 15 total touchdowns and about, you know, 1,600 total yards that season. So I think that when you just look at ETN, if you can find ways to just get him in space in general, that's such an easy way to take advantage of his speed. And I think that that's something, at least from a play caller standpoint with Urban Meyer, that's going to translate from college to the NFL. Whether it's, you know, putting him out at the slot and running screens with him, running slants with him, like short crossing routes on mesh, like just short passes, easy ways to get the ball in his hand. Because, you know, as fast as Travis Etienne is, it's not like, you know, you're just going to put him out there and he's going to go, you know, get a clean release on Jalen Ramsey or something and burn him down the field for a big game. Like, that's not the type of receiver I think that Urban Meyer envisions for him when he's talking about. I just kind of thought about someone that's taking short passes, kind of extension of the run game, but maybe can flip and line out a receiver from time to time. And I think just using that rookie minicamp, time where you're not putting pads on, like, he's already got handoffs from Trevor Lawrence for 4 years, so it's not like he – like, that's a relationship that needs to be built. Like, just go put him at receiver, let's see what happens. And obviously he's going to be playing, you know, a healthy amount of running back too. I just thought that people kind of latched on to Urban saying, oh, you know, he's going to be a third down back. Well, you didn't pick a third down back for the 25th overall pick. Like, I know that you can, like, obviously you're going to criticize the pick, and I think that it was kind of a crazy selection too there, but come on, he's not going to use a third down back for the first round pick. So that's kind of how I think. Just use him as like a little short area receiver that can make big plays with the speed.
I think what confuses me is, like, so when they drafted him, everyone was like, well, you already have James Robinson, who was good, who is an undrafted back. Why did you draft another running back, right? Like, this is not a good use of resources. Now, I hear what you're saying, but I'm like, you already have Laviska Shenault.
Yeah.
He went from stealing, like, the, like, being redundant in one way to potentially being a little bit redundant. This is from a roster construction, because from a football perspective, I understand what you're saying. I'm just thinking, like, okay, you spent a first rounder to replicate a skill you already have on your roster, because I agree that there is a lot of utility in having a hybrid player who's like a, almost like a, like, okay, wide receiver first, running back second. Like, the idea of having ETN on the field, lining him up, and then motioning him back when you've got defenses, you got a light box, is really appealing to me. Because, like, the benefit of a hybrid player is you have this player who stays on the field, you don't have to sub him out, and as a result, you've constantly got defenses on tilt, right? Like, from a personnel perspective, you can get the mismatches you want because you've got him lined up as a wide receiver. Oh, he's going to actually run the football, vice versa. I just think, like, to me, the criticism is more just, it's less like not the criticism, but what I would criticize is less more like, okay, did you really need to spend a first round pick on a guy you kind of already had on your roster? I think Laviska Shenault is really good. Maybe I'm on Laviska Shenault Island there. I don't know. Maybe I'm overrating him a little bit.
I mean, the biggest reason that I kind of rolled my eyes at the ETN pick is, like, you just got a really good season out of James Robinson last year. Like, you know, as far as we go with the, like, you know, the running backs doesn't matter stuff, like, James Robinson is, like, the perfect example. You found him at the UDFA, and he came in and was, like, one of the better running backs in the league. So, like, I was a little bit surprised by that. And, you know, taking the ball out of James Robinson's hands to me is, like, a little bit of a questionable move. But I guess, you know, the Laviska overlap is interesting. But I guess in general, I'm just interested to see what Urban Meyer plans to do with this, you know, stable of skill talent, because I think they do have some guys where they can, you know, have a frisky year on offense. As Trevor Lawrence is as good as a player as he's been billed as, basically since he was a senior or junior or senior in high school. But, you know, just the allocation of resources should definitely be getting an eyebrow raise this year.
Yeah, that's the issue, not, like, using ETN this way. I think it is defensible. But, like, let me ask you this straight up. Like, would you rather have again, this is a roster that I went into this draft thinking was like pretty underrated. They still have an issue at tight end. I'm not going to talk about the tight ends on their roster, but you know, like DJ Chark is good. Like, you know, I, like I said, LaVisca Chenault is a good player. James Robinson was a good player. Wouldn't you rather have Elijah Moore, who was still on the board there in that? Like, don't you feel like that kind of would have rounded out their roster a bit more?
Yeah. I don't know. They're it's kind of in a weird spot with Jacksonville. I'm the biggest thing with Jacksonville that I'm interested to see is like how many games does Urban Meyer coach?
Yeah.
Just in general, because he's not always around for sticking around. And this is going to be the most losing that he's done maybe ever as a head coach. So I'm interested to see like how he personally handles that.
Yeah. I do think, like I said, I think this offense has pretty high upside regardless of how the draft was used. I think they've got some real, like, I think ETN is a really talented, fun player. So with the Harris one, like that one, you know, less people cared because it was the Steelers. The pick was criticized not because of Harris, but because it's like your offensive line is bad. It doesn't matter how good Harris is. So, but that kind of raises an interesting question, like the notion of using Harris more as a wide receiver, because we know Ben's that like it's a lot of RPOs, short passes. Like, do you think that makes sense that the Najee Harris, like, do you think the Najee Harris pick is more defensible if you start thinking of him, about him as another wide receiver?
No, I don't think it is at all. Just because of where the Steelers are as a team, like, yeah. To me, the Najee Harris pick was just such an egregious example of like poor self-scouting and not being honest with yourself about where you are as a franchise. I mean, you know, there wasn't a quarterback worth taking at 24 and they didn't feel like trading up. So, and honestly, financially, you kind of got a running back with Big Ben for one more year. So fine, like quarterback's out of the equation, but like everything else should have been on the board, whether it's a wide receiver or an offensive lineman. I think both of those positions would make a lot more sense than Najee Harris, because I was a huge fan of Najee Harris, the prospect coming out of Alabama, just like a really complete back, like maybe except for pass pro stuff, but just as a weapon out of the backfield, as a runner, I thought he was great. But when you put Najee Harris on the Steelers offense, like what projections does that change for you? Like to me, Najee Harris is someone, he's like the final piece on an offense that's already good, not an offense that's like taking steps back. It was like, well, we need to get back to running the ball every play, because I don't think they have the horses on the offensive line to kind of play that style of football. And I guess like the thing that makes sense with some of the stuff where you see Najee Harris is playing X receiver at rookie minicamp is, you know, the Steelers are a team mainly just due to Ben Roethlisberger's like lack of mobility. Like they've become a team that plays a lot of empty and they're just pointing and shooting and getting these short games and right. Like it's Chris Paul point guard offense without like the high tier playmaking stuff. And you know, when you're going to go and play empty, a lot of times that running back is going to be out there at X. And I imagine that Najee Harris is going to spend, you know, a fair amount of time split out wide just because that's really the only way that Big Ben can play now. But as a whole, like I just don't see how you can make this pick defensible, because I don't think it changes anything about the Steelers' outlook for the season. And that's what you're trying to do with first-round picks. You're trying to make a big difference for your upcoming season. I don't think they did that.
You think they should have taken Creed Humphrey?
I think they should have taken Creed Humphrey there. I thought that would have been a great pick.
I was talking a little bit to our mutual friend Nate Tice about this, like the notion of running back value being augmented by pass catching ability, because statistically you cannot make a case for it. Like I was just grabbing Alvin Kamara's utility as a pass catcher, and EPA per play, success rate, first downs per pass attempt, basically all of the nuanced statistics that aren't just like raw yards or whatever, but like, okay, can we get first downs with this guy? Can he advance the ball and help us avoid negative plays? All of those, just for Alvin Kamara, are worse than every average production you get out of wide receivers on every team. Like it would rank below. However, and this is kind of what Nate and I were talking about, it does help your run game. You know, like all the good pass catching backs, their production statistically catching the ball is diminished by the fact that they're eating checkdowns and crappy, you know, negative plays. But beyond that, it helps him as a back, a rusher, because of the threat that he's going to leak out and catch a pass. So I think that's something that's probably not captured by his production as a pass catcher. So, you know, I think if you were to say, okay, what is the benefit of Najee catching passes? That could be it. I don't think it makes the pick defensible, but I do think his ability, and he's a very good pass catcher, by the way.
Yeah.
I think that could help him running the football, but I still don't think offenses are going to be afraid of Pittsburgh on that front, or defensive.
Yeah, it'll help him running the football, but you know, it's still helping him overcome like what's already such a great challenge for him. Like it'll help, but I'm not sure if it's going to help in a way where, you know, Pittsburgh's running game becomes like a positive thing for their offense. And you know, I get why Steelers fans look at what they had last year and be like, oh no, our running back stable is not good enough here. We need to do something about that. And I would agree with that. But I just don't think that this was the type of move that you need to make. And, you know, going back to some of the Alvin Kamara stuff, obviously he's just a tremendous player. One of my favorite players to watch in the league, you know, dynamite pick is a third round pick. And I'm glad that he got paid. But to me, still the engine of that running game is the offensive line. I mean, they've had one of the best offensive lines in the league for quite some time now. Teron Armstead and Ryan Ramczyk are like about as good as it gets when it comes to bookend tackles. And they've had some pretty good interior play too. Maybe outside of some mishaps by Andres Pete. So that to me is kind of the separator where the Steelers, they just do not have that level of talent on the offensive line right now. And I think that's going to be their biggest issue outside of Big Ben for the coming season.
Yeah, see, it's not anti-running back. It's pro-offensive line. It's all about rebranding. I need like the anti-running back argument needs like a political spin artist to – It's about centers matter, not running backs don't matter. Let's wrap with, you wanted to criticize the Titans, but I feel like this podcast has been so negative that I'm going to spin it.
It's been so sad.
I know, because of the Julio stuff. I'm going to spin it in a positive way. The Titans and the Colts are two teams we mentioned as potential destinations for Julio. Do you think that if the Titans get Julio, they can overtake the Colts to win the division?
Because
the Titans have we know why the case for aggression, loss of coaching, loss of both Johnny Smith and Corey Davis, Dennis Kelly, a lot of issues on that offense, right? They do get, you know, a healthy season out of Taylor Lewan. So, but let me ask you this. So the biggest criticism of them is play calling and skill player. Julio and AJ Brown.
That would be one of the most like physically imposing receiver groups that I can remember quite some time, because like both of the guys are big and fast, and you know, they can make plays at the catch point. Like that'd be a lot of fun. And honestly, I know that Arthur Smith is a great play caller, and the more that I've gone back and watched that Titans offense, I mean, he was just amazing. And losing him is going to end up hurting. But, you know, I think Ryan Tannehill might be a little bit better than people give him credit for, because it's, to me, when I look at the Arthur Smith offense, there's a lot of play action, but it's play action in a way that kind of still makes a quarterback that still relies on the quarterback to make tough throws. Like Ryan Tannehill, he's making a lot of big throws down the field. Even if they're coming off of play action, like it's still, you know, like a play where you have a crosser and a defensive back's right on the wide receiver hip, like that can still be a tough throw. So I do think that maybe their floor isn't quite as low as it's supposed to be, but like if you got Julio Jones in there with as much as opinions say, with AJ Brown, like that's a team that should be able to compete with the AFC South, because I'm just not sold that trading for Carson Wentz was the right move for the Colts. And also, like, an underrated thing that I don't think gets enough play with the Carson Wentz trade is like he's a pretty clear downgrade from where Phillip Rivers was last year. So, like, it, you know, I don't think Carson Wentz is going to continue playing like the worst quarterback that we've ever seen, but I don't think that it's a lock that he ends up playing, you know, like a top 12-ish quarterback like Phillip Rivers did last year. So if the Titans were able to pull off a trade like that, I think that it'd be fair for them to be considered one of the favorites for the division.
Yeah, you know, I already think it's – I mean, AFC South is very much up for grabs, and it is I don't think it's too dramatic to say that if Julio was to land on one of those teams, it would swing the division. Titans, tighten up. Go get him. You don't have any money, but you'll figure it out, I guess. All right. As always, let's wrap with a few questions for our guest.
Here we go.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Charles, the NBA playoffs are happening. They were really exciting. I watched like approximately 58 hours of football this weekend. That's more hours than are in a weekend, but it felt like it. My butt fused to the couch. I don't know. Do you watch a lot of basketball?
Actually, while I was visiting my parents in Charlotte this weekend, I watched almost every Hornets game just because LaMelo was so excited. And obviously, I'm a big LeBron fan. So yeah, I watch a good amount of basketball.
Okay. Just want a prediction out of you. Who wins the NBA Finals?
I think I hate to do this because my buddy Tyler Times is going to get all over me for saying this, but I actually think the Sixers have a pretty good chance to win. Like, I know. I just love Joel Embiid, and I think his game's so complete. And also, I'm just not going to pick the Nets in this podcast. So.
Wow. All right. Interesting. Question two. This is annoying. I already asked you to do it for Justin Fields. When does Mac Jones start? If you had to make a prediction right now, not when should he start, but when will he start?
So my prediction for Mac Jones starting is like the first bad, like 2-game stretch that Cam Newton has. I don't know when in the season that's going to come, but I'll say like midseason for Mac Jones. And I don't think that he's going to open the season as a starter. I think they're going to give Cam a chance to play, but, you know, just the history of quarterbacks in the first round outside of Mahomes, which was just like kind of a completely different situation to me. I don't really see why Mac Jones wouldn't play at some point this year, even if I don't think he's as good as Cam Newton.
They have Saints and Bucks in weeks 3 and 4. And then they get Texans, Cowboys, Jets, super soft. I could see them. Yeah. Giving him those.
It's really fun to talk about like my favorite players leaving or being benched in my birthday week. My birthday's on Wednesday, and this is the gift that the Falcons give me. Hey, we're gonna trade Julio Jones. Oh, thanks.
How old are you turning?
27.
Okay. Question four. One thing I've enjoyed about the NBA playoffs is just like the crowds, and it's made me really want to go to an NBA game. What is a sports event you're looking forward to attending in a post-vax world?
I'm going to the Knicks-Hawks game on Wednesday.
Oh, snap. Really?
Yeah.
Are you so you're not a Hawks? You're a Falcons fan, but not a Hawks fan?
No, not really. I'm more of a Hornets fan, but I'll be dressed in all Atlanta gear on Wednesday just to heckle some Knicks fans and hope I make out of Madison Square Garden alive. So that's one thing I'm really looking forward to, because the last the last sporting event I went to was Jets 49ers week 2, and the first play of the game, Raheem Mostert, took the ball 80 yards on a sweep for a touchdown. And I remember sitting in the press box afterwards and we're waiting for a link for Adam Gase's press conference to start. And I'm like, why am I at this game? Like, I can do all this from home if we're not going to get any access to see people face to face. So that was the last Jets game, or that was the last sporting event I went to. So I'm looking forward to this Knicks-Hawks game on Wednesday.
I really enjoy Trae Young's like villain status.
Oh, it's awesome that when he was, you know, when he was heckling the crowd last night, that was great.
Tremendous. Okay. Last question, as always, comes from Lenny. Lenny heard the news that wide receivers can now wear any number, I think 1 through 49, and then 80 through 89 is the new rule. He just wants to know, when Julio joins the Patriots, do you think he should wear 28 or 3?
I think he should stay wearing number 11. Because he's going to stay with the Falcons and everything's going to turn out happy, and we're going to have some fun over the next few years, and I'm not going to cry on June 1st.
So 28. I got it. 28. All right. 28. Yeah. 28.